Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Welcome to City Alpha 3. I'm Darren, joined here as always with my fellow... We always say mutineers, but that's not the right term. Strandees? Yeah, we're all...
Alleged.
We're all washed up.
Allegedly.
But I'm here with Daniel Prue and Philip Gilfus. Just the three of us. That's the way it's always been.
Right, I can't remember a time it was just the three of us.
No, I mean, we're stranded. The act of being stranded means there's nobody else around. Marooned. Maroonedineers, that's the word we were coming up with. That was on the tip of my
I feel like we all have t-shirts with our name on it and hats with big ears.
It was the last thing we made before we crashed. It was awfully prophetic, but today we have a short transmission for you. I wanted to go over some ships, because you know now this isn't Chakotay and Seven or Chakotay and Janeway. Not those kinds of ships.
Oh man,
we can later talk about that. But I wanted us to list through some of our favorite Federation ships and some of our favorite non-Federation ships. Now, with the caveat that we are not able to list, like, the series ship. So if it's Enterprise, like, you can't pick Enterprise. Or, you know, Deep Space Nine, The Defiant, or Voyager. You know, because, I mean, it has so much of that show. Obviously, it's an easy pick. But I wanted to push us past that. Outside of our comfort zone, out of our warp bubbles, into other ships of the Star Trek universe. Because there's a lot, guys. There are a lot of ships. Some fly sideways, some fly backwards, some cloak. It's an interesting time. So I'm going to start us off with one of... Now this doesn't be your top favorite. I mean, we're not ranking with numbers. Because if we were, we all know which one
would
win.
We should rank with letters.
With letters? A... B for barricade.
There are plenty of them in the alphabet, yeah.
So one of my favorites, I'm going to go, this is on the edge of Federation ship because Federation technically didn't exist yet, but it's, you know, it's an Earth ship, I'll put it. The Phoenix. I mean, it's the first warp ship. Don't let TOS tell you otherwise. And, you know, just I love the design of it. I love the 4-meter cockpit that was scraped together by Lily.
The great Lily. I mean, history's
Lily. The great. Her statue. I mean, she's holding a little phoenix in her hand and in her other hand like a bird. And it's lifting off as she gazes out into where the temporal vortex formed. But yes, so no, but it's a cool ship. And I like how they started off, you know, as the missile and it... But then they actually have like the teeny warp nacelles that are packed in real tight, you know, scissor open to give it that awesome, you know, Star Trek look. How they got back, I don't really know. It didn't seem to have any sort of landing system.
I'm trying to remember. Did we see the ship at the end or was it?
No.
Maybe it didn't. No, maybe it's just not, like the pod comes out and it's just like comes down Mercury 7 style.
That's what it's gotta be because so the cockpit separates and then they deploy a parachute and land in central Montana.
All that water there that'll cushion the landing.
Yeah.
Parachute technology has come a long way
In 2063, there's a giant lake there. Actually, there is a lake, a big lake, a flathead lake in Montana. And it's kind of central, so... But yeah, that's a good point. So we'll chalk that up for slight design flaw. Landing?
What, landing? I thought you just wanted to go warp speed. Okay. You didn't say anything about landing the thing.
It's a temporal... It's a paradox. See, he knew that he didn't need a landing gear because the Enterprise would be there, just beam him down off the ship. And then they just took the Phoenix and put it in a museum right away.
I don't know what to say.
So no one could ever touch
it. How did they get to the Smithsonian? It's just like floating in air, you know, until...
They brought it back to the future with them.
Oh.
No. The Enterprise put the Phoenix in the cargo bay, brought it back to the future. That's how they have
slightly Vulcans, used that actually makes a lot more sense that the Vulcans tractored it down and then land.
But that wouldn't...
I like that, because it makes, like, the Vulcan's haughty attitude make much more sense. Like, yeah, great job there, Scooter. Warp 1, how are you getting your butt down there? No? Okay, well, we'll get you down.
You didn't think about that.
Yeah, great advanced race we've encountered here.
So excited on whether or not it could. It didn't stop to think if it could land. What were you saying, Daniel, though? Like, does that
I was going to say that doesn't work for me, because I feel like that makes the reveal of the Vulcans much less impactful.
That's true.
So we can't have them tractoring us around and then land on our planet and show
it's
up.
It's a metaphor for what they've been doing.
They tractor them down, then they're like, okay, we got to do this cool reveal. So we'll be back in like an hour, guys. And then they circle around and they come back down.
Guys?
They're like, yeah, we already met because you landed us. No. But
I never thought about
it. But no, that's a good point. I mean, we all kind of agree that it lands by a parachute, but it's most likely not the entire ship. So how does the entire ship get into the Smithsonian? Or is it a replica?
Well, also, the entire ship doesn't, because, you know, they blew apart the casing. So, you know, again.
Well, not the cowling, but I mean, I meant the main, you know, the ship, the part that goes to warp one. Right. You know, that's the ship.
I don't know. That's a good question. Did they just, like, put it into orbit for a few years
like
until
the Enterprise, just tractors it and just sets it on the moon? We'll just park it right here.
I'm saying they faked the warp landing. It's an inside job, okay?
But, kind of to circle back around to, I don't know, what we were talking about. I actually really do like the Phoenix design. And, like, literally the breaking of boundaries that happens when those nacelles come out. I mean, you know, it's literally connecting our world to Star Trek world. And it was such a cool reveal at the time. And you kind of sometimes forget about it, but it really did. It was this bridge. There's, like, a visual bridge. And obviously showing us breaking a barrier that we hope we will be able to break someday.
What are your thoughts on the hope we can land Phoenix, Philip?
Well, like a phoenix burning in the fire, so the upon reentry. I mean it was, you know, again the use of a rocket, and of course, you know, you would think by that time, which is almost our time, we wouldn't be using rockets anymore, but it's, you know, a throwback, of course. I mean, which you're smarter about this than I am, Darren, you know, the early NASA program, which the rockets really looked like rockets, you know, before the space shuttle.
Well, that was lifted by rockets, Philip. It just wasn't, you know, a single rocket, but yeah.
But that's sort of the throwback there. And then, of course, the poetry of using the weapon of war for the weapon of discovery. And because those
look, Philip, I'm just looking for dollar signs, money,
naked women.
That's why I built this ship.
Because I like the nacelles, and I'm trying to remember. I know, like, I haven't watched this movie a million times, but it's a throwback to sort of the original series, because it does have, like, the light up, whatever.
It does have a TOS feel, which is
whatever
nice.
Whatever what those were.
The Bussard Ramp.
Which I don't know if that's what they were in TOS. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's retconned, of course, but even then, I don't know if that's what they were supposed to be. But anyway, but it has that sort of cool look and nacelles, and I like how nacelle look aesthetic. Like, that's a nacelle. There's no other way to do a nacelle for 300 years. It's what nacelles look like, guys.
Look, it worked for my dad. It worked for his dad.
His father. We all went warp one, and it was good enough for us. I mean, obviously it's simple, but yeah, because I had I want to call it the cheap toy, but I'll call it the cheap toy. That came out when first contacted.
The Playmates.
Yeah,
where toy?
You just like open it up and down, and the cells like chio chio. You know, and the cells would go up and down, up and down. And so, yeah. You know, it'd be cool if they made a more, which I know they'd probably want, but if they made a little bit more, not that you have to be super detailed, but a little bit more detailed Phoenix, that'd be kind of cool.
Now, would it be detailed to have a little Cochrane in the window?
And then Riker and Geordi in the back.
And he's holding a tiny, tiny music disc. I mean, this thing is really
you'd press
small,
the button,
the
and it would be like, dare, 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 dare. Yeah.
Life is a dream. Yeah, no, and I can't remember if I saw it in a technical picture, but I think the space in the middle between where the nacelles are is actually open. So, because again, if you're following the Roddenberry rule, the nacelles have to be able to see each other that's how all of our,
like,
nacelles
arches somehow, or
no, more like so they're packed up And then when they come out, they kind of go back a little bit.
Yeah, they do.
So you have the arms, but you would have a negative space in the middle there where
they could
see each other.
There is in fact empty space in the middle.
Oh, which Roddenberry would approve. it's a great ship. It's a lot of fun. I say it fits with the Federation because it will become the Federation. It's an Earthship. But what is one of your favorite Federation human ships, Daniel?
I'm gonna jump ahead a few hundred years here, and I'm gonna talk about the Prometheus.
Oh. Whoa, that's a good jump
there. Which is a super fun little ship. I like that it's way more angular than we're used to seeing up to that point for Federation ships. And then, of course, obviously, you have the fact that it separates into three separate spaceships, individual spaceships.
Along with theme music.
Two.
That's my favorite part.
It's got a lot of buttons. So many, in fact.
It is, I guess, it's probably the grandfather, or no, wait, great-great-grandson to the J.J. Apple Bridge, right? Because everything's all white and clean and in there.
It's very empty, so.
I think
it's
mostly
bridge,
due to the dead
big,
crew in that case, but space. Yes, it's very.
But I like the ship design. I like it, like I said, because it's a little bit different. It's still got, obviously, the recognizable characteristics that we like about Federation ships, but it's, like I said, it's more angular, and it's got technically four nacelles, but other than two. So it's cool.
No, it's got more than four because there's one. There's two on the bottom part, two on the top part, and then there's at least that one little one that sticks up out of the saucer.
Little baby one.
Little baby one.
I forgot about
yeah.
How
Which
fast can that
looking.
Thing go?
Don't do that.
Like, is it like warp
one? Well, the
one?
Only reason it's there is to keep. No. I don't think it can propel it into warp, but I think it's to keep it at warp when they separate.
Because
otherwise, you have a ship that doesn't have an nacelle
on
it.
Well, I mean, that's about as much probably warp power as the Defiant has. I mean, right? Is that about the same size?
Then again, why would they even separate at warp? Because wasn't that extremely dangerous thing to do?
Yeah, but we did it in the first episode. So.
The Enterprise paved the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it is a cool ship. I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of the ships we didn't see a lot of. I mean, especially like the first Star Trek First Contact, sort of the 24th century ships, which I know sounds silly, because Deep Space Nine, Voyager, that's all 24th century ships, but I sort of mean like the post, I guess starting with First Contact and every ship that came after that. There's a different look, and I don't know how to describe it other than you know when you see it, but it just has that look of like, it's sort of like all modifications of like Enterprise E, which I mean I would include in that, but like, you know, and then Voyager, sort of like Voyager meets the Enterprise E, and every ship is from that concept where it kind of just has that, they're all different looking, but it sort of has that interesting look of like, it's not going to be a perfect sphere or even an elliptical sphere, but we're kind of play with these sort of triangle and different use of circles that aren't perfect and up and down and all around. And I do enjoy all those ships that obviously you only see for like 5 seconds in either Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and even First Contact movies and onwards from that.
Yeah, the Prometheus was a nice ship. The one thing I kind of wish, because the saucer part, I guess, triangle, can call it a saucer, but it's, you know, that I like
secondary
and the way
hole.
Or tertiary hole, but yeah, it's I like the way it fits on the top of the secondary hole, but then the fact that the bottom two literally split like in this line, like they just kind of deck five, you know, deck 20, that's the line, right? Everything below that, you know split. Like I would have liked to see, you know, parts that are raised up into recesses above it and below, like just break up the topography of that line a little bit.
Because
it's
like,
yeah, because when they separate, it literally looks like they, you know, the ship was flying at warp and then, you know, some like a great space entity had a giant, you know, katana and it was just like, wah! And it just like cuts through deck 15 is just gone. It just cuts right through it. It's like, ha, fooled you. That's our separation plane. Aha!
It's like Hogwarts. There's now a deck 15 and a half and three quarters.
That would be quite the sharp katana, I would say.
A perfect cut of a starship.
You know,
it's a giant green hand that, you know, in space.
You know, I also wanted to give a little bit of love to the ransom.
Oh,
ship.
I had it right here. I was getting ready to talk about it.
Oh, sorry, I didn't want to steal your thunder. I just wanted to make sure we talked about it.
The Equinox.
Yeah.
Equinox. Yeah.
It's like a little baby ship, but I like the design. It's very,
I mean, the Equinox is my pick. Thank you, Daniel. God bless it. Every
good
time.
Good transition, Daniel.
Sorry.
but yeah, because it's one of those things, you know, you only see it for what, two episodes, Equinox part one and two, obviously, in Voyager, but they looked at the Voyager. Actually, it's interesting. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. This is actually, if you look in the old, you look in the old TNG technical manual, if you look in the back section, it talks about future starship plans. And there's something called the Nova-class starship, and it looks exactly like the Equinox. And I forget what class, I don't think it's actually Nova-class, but feel free someone to look it up. So they've been thinking about this since the end of, well, not the end, but the middle of TNG.
It is Nova class.
Yeah, so they've been thinking about this concept for a while, and so I like it because it's the Voyager concept, which actually I do like Voyager. It's definitely a ship that grows on me, the design features, but the use of the deflector, where it's sort of on Voyager. I mean, you sort of have the main deflector, but that secondary deflector starts working its way through ship design in the secondary hull. So, like, you know, on the Equinox, you have it sort of in that top part. You know, would make a nice bottle opener if you had a full size model.
Which is kind of strange that it has two deflectors because it's so small. I would think, do you need to make this ship able to separate? I mean, it's.
Well. Oh, is it because of. Is it
yeah, it
separation?
May not be.
Well, that's what I would think.
Well, does have a captain job, I noticed.
I think it's. I assume it's because it's got a whole bunch more sensors because it's a science vessel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's true. So one's like the navigational deflector and the other one is like the main sensor array.
No, I mean, I do have a few concerns that the nacelles have spoilers. I'm not sure how those are mechanically correct. But
Space spoilers.
But I do, you know, it's a small ship. But even if, I mean, you can, it's all a matter of scale. It could be a big ship. But obviously, it is a smaller science ship. But. Just the little things, and, you know, just a little, has your classic little...
Depends how close it is to the camera.
Has your classical, or what I call your classic shuttle bay, you know, just on the back, just, there's no secondaries or whatever, and your sort of short phaser arrays and everything. But I think it's just a cute little ship, but it has that late 24th century look to it. Yeah.
Little.
I wonder what the size of this is compared to the Defiant. It's probably almost the same, but anyway.
Yeah, it's nice because you... Because you look at it and it's the length is, I mean, if you want to look up the length of Defiant, the Equinox is 165 meters long. But yeah, I like how it's like they took the concept of the Voyager, or like they build Voyager and that class, and then they're like, okay, we need this little science vessel that's, you know, it's not going to go very far. It's usually going to be part of a fleet. And
Defiant is 170.
Okay, so it's 5 meters shorter than the Defiant, so it's really similar in size. But yeah, I like, you know, because you look at it and you get those telltale signs of its size, like the how large the windows are and how big the, you know, the escape pods, you know, Kelvin pods are, and you know, yeah, it's a great little ship, and the way they talk about it, you know, it really works for the episode because. Yeah, it only has, I think, like eight decks or so. It's very, very small. But it doesn't have the resources that Voyager has, and so it's really strapped for.
I don't think Voyager has
everything.
The resources Voyager has, but that's another podcast. Yeah.
That's true.
It's also got the Enterprise E nacelles, which are the best nacelles. So
it even has a shuttle. It even has like an Arrow Wing shuttle in it. It's they found room for that yet.
So like you can either have photon or quantum torpedo launcher or aero shuttle, and like captain's like aero shuttle, you know. But so that's
I just saw a little design called a Nova carrier where it's literally like the middle of the ship is hollowed out on deck four, and the front where the deflector is like a loading base. You have a door in the back and a door in the front, and it has. Six runabouts shoved inside of it.
Oh, okay. Sort of the aircraft carrier in space.
But yeah, so the Nova class is a great little one. Equinox is really good. So we've gone through our Federation ships. So next I wanted to just touch on the non-Federation ships. And this one I actually had to think about for a little bit because there's so many. But at least for this list, again, this isn't like your absolute favorite, but one that you really like. I just had to go with the Borg cube.
Oh, dang. Both of you today.
It's a good one.
It's really, especially like the shots we get of it. So you get some time to come up with something else. the shots we get, yeah, in First Contact, where it's scraping the glass off the lens of the camera. And it's just so big, but the way that it, you know, it just flies at you, and we get some great shots in Voyager where like the swarm, you got to call it a swarm, you know, of Borg cubes are like flying by, and you know, for some reason that causes Voyager to shake as if it's in a ocean, but it's just, you know, it's a classic. You know, I mean, some may go sphere, some may go trapezoid, but you got to go
rhombus.
With the classic.
The Borg rhombus, yeah, folks.
The rhombus, the torus. You know, it's just, you got to go with the classic cube.
Well, it's one of those things, I mean, I think it's so simple, but it's scary, and I think it's hard to get a good one. Like, you know, I have my Micro Machines Borg cube, but it doesn't do it justice, because you have to have, like, the holes and the see-through and the kit look, even though that's so simple and stupid, but it still looks, you know, I don't know.
It's like they took every, you know, those clip out trays, like when you're putting a bottle together, like the scrap pieces that after you've taken it out, it's like they took a million of those and just put it all over the surface. And even for, you know, Next Generation, I think the model they built for it is fairly large. I think it's at least probably 2 feet square. It's pretty big.
Not cubed.
Well, yeah, no. It's got cutting tools. It's got little emergency escape spheres, and
best part of how many shapes inside shapes there are.
And then out of the sphere comes a triangle, and it just keeps progressing down the shuttle, little shuttle,
all the way down. Yeah, it's so. What happened was they watched Star Wars, and they're like, "What is scarier than a sphere?"
Corners are scary.
No, but it is.
Well, there's destroyers are cones, aren't they?
It's super iconic, and it's scary because there's like no recognizable features at all on it. It's just a mass coming at you. Like, you can't see the engines. There's no weak spots as far as you can tell. You can't even see where the shots are coming from or anything like that. It's so cool in its simplicity, and it's like terror. It's awesome. I love that. I love the design of the Borg. And then, of course, they came out the sphere, and that felt kind of blah. But
then you have your tactical spheres, and they got, or I mean, cubes.
Yeah, and then they start doing that kind of stuff. Crazy. I feel like they wouldn't need tactical spheres when they. That's a whole other subject.
I also like the fact that we don't know a lot. I mean, there's no schematic of the inside of a Borg cube. Like, it's not centralized. There's
a lot
not,
of hallways.
You know, yeah, it's a lot of hallways. I mean, we have that big pullback shot in First Contact, which is great. But I love the fact that it's not, that we don't know really what the inside is. Or I mean, imagine how lost you would be. I mean, one, it's huge.
Well,
it's also huge with a completely filled internal volume.
Well,
you have to take a left past the nursery of babies in the
maturation chamber.
Drawer babies are my best babies. well, I think like the pullback of First Contact, though, even though I love it, it's a little confusing because, like, you know, you pull out, you see all the drones or whatever, and then you're like, the hollow cone. Like, what does that do? Why is there this huge empty space? Is this the middle of the, like, what are you doing
kind of
with
feels
all this
like
empty space?
The shot in Independence Day where they're inside the alien ship and it's just this huge vast chasm, and I'm like, that's really inefficient. Like, why don't we fill that with alcoves? Because you know what we could use more of?
Borg
alcoves. Yeah. Man, imagine, I know they wouldn't need to, but how cool would it be if when the Borg were assimilating a planet, they just land the cube. They just plug it into the planet and just come
incoming
out.
Game. Incoming
yeah.
game.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Warning,
that's awesome.
Incoming game. Oh, it's too perfect. I love it. But yes, but yeah, the Borg cube and its spinoff, you know, Sister Shapes, but it's
Sister Shapes.
Is that literally what the Borg episode, the series is called? And welcome to Sister Shapes. It's a Borg spinoff. Starring your favorite number drones and summon someone as the queen. Do 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 do.
The cube and Sister Shapes.
Yep.
But yeah, so okay, so Daniel, as Philip gets even more time to think of a new extra ship, what is one of your favorite non-Federation ships?
This is so easy, The best designed ship in all of Star Trek, of course, is the Romulan D. Dyrdix class Warbird. Oh man, it is so cool for so many reasons. The first and immediate thing you think of is the striking green color, which is fantastic. Of course, you have the awesome scale of the ship. Of course, it's not near the Borg cube, but you know, next to the Enterprise, you know, we've talked about this. You can fly the Enterprise between the wings.
Speaking of wasted space,
and then of course you have the fact that it's. No, it's not wasted. We have the fact that this thing is powered by an artificial singularity. How cool is that? This is the cool, by far
they call that the kill zone in the middle there. If any ship wanders in, it's just like disruptors from the top, disruptors from the bottom, from the sides. It is gone.
But man, I love
that.
Just
like, is it hard to shoot at the Warbird? Because you just like phew right through me, haha, fooled you.
Yeah. it's true. It does have a very small profile, depending on which angle.
I imagine that the shields probably envelop it, so you would end up hitting a shield instead of going through it. But
no, I really like the D. Dyrdix. I have now. I'm pretty sure you've seen the concept art it was first being designed, where the wing was vertical, so the same front, but instead of being more horizontal, it was vertical, which they actually I really like as a look, but I think they changed it because it would be too hard to shoot, you know, in line next to the Enterprise, because the Enterprise is a very horizontal.
What if it was like the Klingon Bird of Prey, where it was like always vertical, and then when it went into battle mode, it went
it like turned sideways. Like, yeah, that would be sweet.
You kind of like it better as horizontal anyways, though. It is kind of cool looking, though.
It's just, I feel the horizontal just kind of has like a power to it, because we're so used to the vertical, where it's just like, I don't know, maybe it almost has a Vulcan-ish look.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of, too.
But,
man, those ships are so cool.
Star Trek.
Calm down, Daniel. Calm down. But yeah, no, that's a really good, I mean, from when we first see it, and then you realize how big it is next to the Enterprise, because the Enterprise is pretty big. Like, imagine it next to, like, Kirk's ship. I mean, at least, because the original Warbird, or Bird of Prey, I guess, was pretty comparable to the size of the Enterprise, like the saucer, at least.
Yeah, well, because I was technically, and you can correct me, I was saying technically a Romulan Warbird is the Klingon-looking ship in the 23rd century.
That's true.
Yep.
But, you know, technically speaking.
I know.
All right, Philip, you've had plenty of time to back from your devastating blow of me choosing.
You just said mine like 5 minutes ago. I thought you were just going to steal it again and keep talking about it. But that would be the Vulcan ring ship from Enterprise. Oh. I think one we never see on screen, unless it was on Admiral Marcus's desk, is the Ring Enterprise. Always seen the concept art.
Well, we obviously see that in the motion picture, but yeah.
Oh, is that? Yeah, that's where it's. I remember, yeah. And so that idea, or
that's
that,
where it came from initially.
Okay, yeah, that design has always fascinated me. And then you can sort of retcon it that is from the Vulcan ring ship design that you see in Enterprise. And you know, it's not like the most awesome thing in the world, but I think the concept of like, can you do something without a nacelle? And then they come up with the ring, and you're like, you know what? That works. And I just think that concept is something different, very different from what we see in the Federation, because I think that's always the hard part. But I like that one.
Yeah, the ring ship is a cool ship. I like how also in Enterprise you have the different classes. So you have like the really big one that it's like the rings below it, and then the smaller one where it's kind of like around it in the middle, and it's just
the zombie one.
Yes, the zombie one, the one full of zombies. But it's a nice design, and it does kind of put a little bit of that retcon in that the Enterprise we see, you know, in that was because we were trying to directly imitate the Vulcans and what we saw that their warp drive worked. And then we're like, it's not working out so much, so we're going to go back to the good old two-to-cell approach.
You know what we can do with our warp drive? Land. So if you guys want to adopt that, that would be...
Look, that one time, it's the first warp flight, you guys won't let it go. I can see Zefren Cochran in his speech going, "This warp 5 complex built where I landed my ship."
Is it like Robin
right
Hood?
Right over there.
Any assistance?
Next to the statue.
Like Robin Hood,
built.
Wherever my arrow doth land. It's like, where the Phoenix landed, that is where we will build.
We will build the Warp 5 complex of immense power and prestige. Yes, I could see that. Well, you know. But, no, it's any other thoughts you had on the Vulcan ring design, Daniel?
It's great. Obviously we didn't get a lot of Vulcan ship design early on, so I like how theirs works and how it's very distinctive. And I just hope, maybe hopefully in Discovery, we'll get to see a bunch more.
It's true.
All we really got to see, and y'all get me if I'm wrong, we get the, whatever you want to call it, scout ship, for lack of a better word, in First Contact, which is very unusual looking design. And then you sort of get the ring ships in Enterprise. And then you get the courier ship in the motion picture, which is from 2001, apparently. Not really, but it's like here it is, the courier's coming. Is he gonna dock? No, first he has to detach the portion of the ship. Really?
That docks.
It seems like you could just dock. No, hold on. Okay, well, it just comes off. No, it has to flip first. That seems like that's unneeded, but okay.
I mean, it could have just, it is space, so literally could just turn around at any point on its axis, but it looks cool. So, yeah, no, it's, we don't get a lot of Voyager and Hope, or sorry, not Vulcan, Voyager, Vulcan. We don't get a lot of Vulcan ships, and it would be nice to see a lot more of that. Hopefully, like you said, Daniel, in Discovery, we could discover some Vulcan ships. Although, it's sounding like we're getting some Klingon ships, which I'm cool with, too.
That's true, because, all we have is the D7, and surely there has to be another design. I mean, I know...
Like the D6.
There's plenty other numbers left in the Klingon alphabet. And yes, I stand by that statement.
No. I'm excited for new ships of all sorts in Discovery. Unless they significantly change
I've
it,
heard
which...
they have changed it a bit,
I hope so.
We will see.
Will we?
Hey, it's actually starting filming next week, about 10 days from now.
Right.
That's the rumor.
Good for 4 months from now.
I'm ready for all of the planets they visit to look like Stargate planets and the Canadian Northwest.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a lot like Toronto. Yeah,
but it's neither here nor there. So it's been a lot of fun talking about ships. I mean, like I said, there's so many ships. I'm sure we're going to be revisiting ships as well as those relationships. We'll eventually get to those as well. But this has been a fun transmission. Here on City Alpha 3, as we are always stuck, just the three of us, no one else, just us three. So, Daniel, if someone wanted to send you a transmission, where would they find you online?
They could get a hold of me on Twitter, at OneUpDan. That is the number one, as in, Romulans are the best. Not the word.
And, Philip, if someone wanted to find out your thoughts on the Borg, unspoiled, how would they reach you?
Well, being three of three, because I'm number one in the Borg, they can find me at NC Public Servant on Twitter.
That's funny. So when you were talking, somehow you said three of three. It's like it was edited in post. I don't know how that happened. Well, if someone wanted to talk to me about the Phoenix and its landing maybe capabilities, then they can talk to me on Twitter in username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. Because in science fiction, it's important to these details like landing and getting off your ship. Oh, well, it's been a fun week talking here on City Alpha 3. But, of course, there are many other shows here on the Nerd Party. There's Nerd Nuptial, our newest show, Outpost, missing frames. I don't know about you guys. I've been enjoying a lot of the shows we have here on the network. So check out nerdparty.com to listen to all of those, because we have some great podcasters with us, and it's only going to get better. Filibuster, there's a lot to talk about here on the Nerd Party. So, Daniel, what are we going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we are going to be talking about all about our chief security / tactical / ops coordinator, whatever they're called, but the people that shoot the people. we'll be talking about them.
Mercenaries?
The ones that make things go pew-pew in Star Trek. We'll be talking about those people.
Trigger-happy Klingons at tactical. Yeah. Got it. Awesome.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And I'm Darren Moser, stranded here on City Alpha 3.